In her latest book and first memoir, actress, activist, and best-selling author Marlo Thomas shares with her readers what it was like to grow up the daughter of a legendary comedian, Danny Thomas, in a home frequently visited by comedic geniuses like George Burns, Milton Berle, Sid Caesar, Joey Bishop, Bob Newhart, and Buddy Hackett. Laughter proved to be the catalyst that led to Ms. Thomas's successful career in show business and the reason she wrote this book she's calling Growing Up Laughing, My Story and the Story of Funny. It's published by Hyperion. I'm very pleased that it has brought Marlo Thomas back to our show. Hi.
Hi, I like your new studios.
Yeah, me too. But what do you mean, the story of funny?
Well, because I, as I was investigating the comedy in my life, I really wanted to look at my life through the lens of comedy. I realized how much of my laughter, my joy, and my comedy timing comes from my dad and all those comedians. And it made me wonder, well, where did everybody else get it? Yeah. So I called Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock and Jay Leno and Joy Behar and Joan Rivers and Billy Crystal and Jon Stewart and all these wonderful comedians, 20 of them. And I asked them, who was funny in your life? How did you get funny? When did you think you were funny? And their interviews, which are in my book, are just great. I mean, they're very funny. They're laugh-out-loud funny. But they're also very interesting about the craft of comedy and about really how one develops a sense of humor.
Well, a few of them grew up in households where their parents were funny, like Ben Stiller.
Right.
But many of them just seem to have arrived at it on their own. Do you think it's a genetic thing?
I think it's cultural. They all had a funny family member. Jay Leno's father was an insurance salesman. And he used to, before he went out on a call, he would try jokes out on Little Jay. And Little Jay thought, wow, what a great profession. You know, you get to tell jokes if you're an insurance salesman. You know, Robin Williams' mother used to put a rubber band up her nose. And when his friends came over, she'd let it drop out. Well, I mean, there's no big surprises to where Robin got that abandoned, wild sense of humor from. And they're all like that.
But in your case, I mean, you had some of the most famous funny people in the world just coming by.
Yeah.
To dinner or to schmooze.
Right.
And you often sat around just listening to them. How young were you when you began to take an interest in what they were actually doing for a living and what they were saying?
My dad, there's a picture in the book of me and my father when I was around 8 years old at a nightclub. My dad used to take me to nightclubs all the time. He liked to go because it was his business. And
he didn't let you drink.
No, Coca-Cola, Shirley Temple's with a little umbrella. He would take me. And so as long as I can remember, I went to nightclubs with my dad. And whenever he had the comedians over, the amazing thing is that he never shooed us out of the room. You know, a lot of parents, when their friends are over, you know, they tell their children to go to bed. My dad never did that. My sister and brother and I would sit on the floor till 3 in the morning if we wanted to, listening to them tell jokes.
Well, some of them were always told prepared jokes.
Yes.
Others were great as ad-libbers. Were they just as funny when they were performing in your house as
I think they were funnier because they would tell stories on themselves. I tell one in the book about Jan Murray trying to get Frank Sinatra's autograph one night, and it's hilarious. And he had my father so convulsed with laughter that my father was lying on the floor screaming, stop, stop, afraid that he would literally die of laughing. That's how much they threw themselves into the laughter. And I'm a little bit like that.
Some of these guys, I'm thinking of Sid Caesar and Milton Berle in particular, always seemed to be on. Was that really the case?
They were, yeah. But Milton was always on. Milton used to do card tricks at our birthday parties. And the kids would say, oh, cheater, I saw you do that. I saw what you did. Nothing fazed him. He was happy to be performing. Conan O'Brien talks about that, too, in his interview. He says that when he went to jury duty, if you're a famous person, they don't want you on the jury. But you have to go. As a citizen, it's a responsibility. So you go to jury duty, and they let you go at the end of the day, and you don't get chosen. But they had asked Conan if he would go in and say hello to some of the workers. He said there were about 10 people there, so he started working for them. He said, I was killing in that room. I was absolutely killing. I thought it was so funny.
But you also tell a story about how lovable Uncle Milty was kind of grouchy when he was doing a guest spot on That Girl.
Yeah. I had always known him as just this funny guy, and then he was a guest star on my That Girl show, and he was difficult. And I realized he was complaining. It was too cold in the dressing room. He was too hot. He was hungry. He had to go home soon. All this stuff. And he was walking around the set in this white terry cloth robe and a towel around his neck like he'd just gone 6 rounds with Ali, you know. And I asked my assistant director, said, "You've got to do something. I mean, he's driving me crazy. We're wasting time." So I called my father. I said, "What do I do? He's acting nutty." And Dad said, "Oh, just ask him to spell words that start with R." I said, "Words that start with R? What are you talking about?" So I said, "Okay, I'll go back to the set." And there Milton was complaining to everybody about how he felt. And I said, "Milton, how do you spell recluse?" And he went, "R-E-Q-L-U-S-E, you know. Then I said, "How do you spell remember?" And he went, "R-E-M-B-M-M-M-E-M-M-R-M-M-M." You know, and everybody laughed. And off came the robe and off came the towel. Now he felt comfortable. People were laughing. And he it was like the lubricant for his gift, you know? And that so touched me.
You pushed the right button there.
Exactly.
Now, I would assume that you would have felt a little pressure to be funny yourself. Your father's funny.
Yeah.
Your mother could be funny. Everybody who came to the house was funny.
No, I didn't feel pressure at all. I couldn't wait to get in.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Well, you were a prankster as a little girl, you say. You even got yourself in trouble for pulling a prank during Mass.
Right, I did. Well, I think, you know, if you're raised in a family where everybody's telling jokes, all the people who come over, you know, I didn't really know that George Burns was famous. He was my father's funny friend, you know.
Did you know your father was famous?
I knew he was on television, sure, and people always asked for his autograph when we went out to dinner and stuff. But as a little kid, you don't put that all together, you know. I don't even know if you know the word famous when you're a little kid.
Well, you think that all kids have this kind of family life.
It's like my husband told me that his daughter was, when she was around 7 years old, she was at her friend's house and she came back and said, "Daddy's on my friend's television set." She couldn't get over that Phil Donahue was on her friend's set. But I think that kind of inspires you to be funny and tell jokes. I didn't feel a pressure about it.
Well, that prank that you pulled in church,
yes,
strikes me as an early feminist act as much
it was,
as something
it really
to be funny.
It was. It really was, because they wouldn't allow the girls or the nuns on the altar, even to put flowers. I mean, women were not allowed past that altar rail. So this girlfriend of mine, Moya, and I, we were just furious. We were 13 years old. So we decided when the priest came, he, of course, had no altar boys because there were no boys at our school at Marymount. And so we hid the bells, and which was a terrible prank to do. And then we sat in the back to wait to see what he would do when he was fumbling for the bell. And we fumbled for them, and then he did this thing that nobody could have expected. He went, "Ding-a-ling-a-ling." And then he said it again, "Ding-a-ling-a-ling," because it's three times. "Ding-a-ling-a-ling." Well, of course, I mean, we were expelled immediately because we were laughing like crazy people in the back row. My father had to go back up to see the principal and get me back at the school.
What about your brother and sister? Did they show any interest in doing comedy? Did they go into show business?
My brother, Tony Thomas, has produced Golden Girls and Empty Nest and Soap and a lot of wonderful comedies. He's a very good he's very funny, and his shows have been great. My sister is a mother, a single mother, but she actually is the funniest person in the family. She writes jokes, and she's very – Daddy always used to say that she was Joey Bishop.
My guest is Marlo Thomas, whose latest book, your first memoir,
yes,
is called Growing Up Laughing, My Story and the Story of Funny. It is published by Hyperion. Did your mother and the wives of these other comedians, most of them were men, did they have difficulty where their husbands were on the road all the time?
They did. It was hard. It was a hard life. Before my dad really settled into television, you know, a lot of our childhood was spent on the telephone or traveling. My mom would go up to the school and get the nuns to give us Friday and Monday off so we could have a four-day weekend. My mother really kept our family intact. I think the reason my parents were married 55 years and that we had a kind of a normal childhood is that she wanted to be sure the family was intact. So we would go to Las Vegas or Florida or Chicago or New York, wherever my dad was playing, so that we could be with him.
Well, you mentioned the nuns. Most people thought your father was Jewish.
I know.
And there was even an attempt to make him into an honorary Jew at one point.
Oh, yes. Oh, not an attempt. He became one. Hillcrest Country Club is where he used to play golf and cards with George Burns and Milton and Sid Caesar and all of them. And the Hillcrest Country Club was restricted to Jews because the Jews had been kept out of every other club in Los Angeles. So in the 20s, sometime in the 20s, they built the Hillcrest Country Club. And my dad spent all of his time there with his pals, who happened to all be Jewish comics. So they said, you know, it's not fair that Danny can't be a member. Why don't we make him an honorary member? Because he's Catholic, he couldn't be a member. So they went to the board meeting, and Groucho said, look, I don't mind if we make a non-Jew an honorary member, but couldn't we at least pick somebody who doesn't look Jewish?
Can we talk a bit about acting? Well,
yes.
You had a breakthrough television series, and then afterward you went to study acting with Lee Strasberg.
Yeah.
I would have thought it would be the other way around.
That would be logical.
Especially since many people tell you that doing comedy is the hardest kind of acting.
It is. I don't know, though, that you can learn it from an acting teacher. You may have to learn it from your father.
Somebody like George Carlin told me that he wrote everything, even the us and the wells were all in the act, and what he was doing is simply doing an acting performance.
Absolutely. They all are. And what is great, and that's why I loved interviewing these comedians, they take the craft of comedy very seriously. The audience is their compass, and they really hone it for that audience. So by the time you see Chris Rock in a television special, as he says in my book, he's done that 30 times before he does it on an HBO show. So they're very serious about it, and they know how to shred it, get rid of the darlings that don't work, and really put together an act that you'll enjoy.
Although there was a time when everybody wanted to be Lenny Bruce, and you never knew what he was going to do on any given night.
But we don't know how much he planned either, because I always thought George Carlin was just, spontaneous.
What about your father? Was he writing his own material?
Absolutely. That's where I first saw it and heard it. When I was a little girl, my father used to listen to his act. He'd come off the road, and he'd have that kind of tape machine that it would rewind, and rewinding it sounded like a Swedish movie. And I'd go in, and in there he'd be, my nickname is Muggsy, and he'd say, "You see, Muggs, that joke doesn't work there, or they're laughing too hard here. I'm going to put a song in there. I'm going to get rid of this entire routine." He would listen to what the audience was enjoying and figure out, for the next engagement, what that act would be.
Is that something you kept in mind when you were doing that, girl?
Always. Always. I always have the audience in mind. And my dad taught me a wonderful lesson. He said, the audience will follow you anywhere as long as you don't lie to them. So once you have what your story is, you stay on that story. You don't get off the track for a cheap laugh.
I would have thought that girl would have had you feeling like you had it made. Why did you go and study acting afterward?
I was sent a script about a woman who was an alcoholic. And when I read it, I thought, I don't know how to do this. I have no idea how to do this. I know how to be funny, but I don't know how to be drunk. I don't know how to do that believably. Not a funny drunk, but a real alcoholic. So I thought, I'll go back to New York and study with Lee Strasberg, because I'd always thought he was the greatest. And so I studied with him, actually not for a year, but 3 years. I just adored it. And I won an Emmy as the best dramatic actress for playing a schizophrenic in Nobody's Child. I would never have gotten to that kind of performance without the work that I learned with him.
Well, they do say that the best way to play a drunk is to play a drunk as though he's not drunk.
Okay, let me see you do that.
Well, you know what I mean. In other words, if you start flopping all around,
right.
It doesn't look real.
Well,
but what you want to look like is somebody who is very much trying to be in control.
Right. Well, there's a little more to it than that emotionally.
Well,
but
I'm not an actor. What the heck? So why did it take you so long to write a memoir? Well, no, I believe in doing it the old-fashioned way. I'd rather just get drunk. A whole younger generation may very well know you for the work you do for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, which you founded with your dad.
No, my dad founded it. Oh yeah.
And that's the serious side.
Well, that's an important side. I mean, my father came from a very poor neighborhood, immigrant family. They never went to the doctor. 10 children, 9 boys and a girl. My grandmother had them all at home. No doctors. And my dad said that in those early childhood years in those immigrant neighborhoods where there were blacks and Chinese and Jews and Arabs and Irish and Italian, nobody went to a doctor. And kids died of influenzas and rodent bites and stuff like that. So he had a front seat at the inequities of healthcare, and he really wanted to do something about it. And he used his gift of laughter to build St. Jude.
Why did it take you so long to write a memoir?
I don't know. I've been asked many times to do it, and I thought, oh, I don't want to do one of those books where, oh, then I knew this guy, and then I didn't like this guy. And I thought, I don't want to write that book. But when I got a hold of the fact that I wanted to tell my whole story through laughter and have jokes in the book as well.
And some of them are really funny.
Aren't they funny?
Yeah.
I was on a plane, and I saw a man laughing out loud, and I didn't know he was reading my book. And when I came back from the bathroom, I said, oh, my God, you're laughing at my book. How exciting.
Marlo Thomas's joke book. She will be at the Barnes & Noble store across from Lincoln Center tomorrow night at 7:30.
Yes.
The book is called Growing Up Laughing, My Story and the Story of Funny. It's published by Hyperion. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, Lord,
it's been a lot of laughs.
I know. I love to see you. Thanks.